university?
My age, because I didn't really get it until 68. I was 12 when it came out.
So yeah, that's
somebody slapped the number when I was 14. In 68, I was like,
Well, that's
really
okay. All right. Well, let's save that story because I'll ask. That's one thing I'll ask. I've been asking people. So give me your name and say where you were, like where you were growing up and how old you were when Revolver hit in 66.
1966. From Albuquerque, Scott McNichol, and Revolver came out. I'm going to remember the summer, and of course, being 12 years old, something like Yellow Submarine grabs you, and the top 40 stations played that quite a bit. So obviously a gadget song by Ringo's, they kind of usually tossed at him, it seemed. And so at that time, for me being 12, I was still kind of in the singles thing, and the Beatles to me at that age were more like a singles band, and listening to the top 40 radio stations of the day, and so they were mixed in with everything else. So,
yeah. So when were you kind of into the Beatle mop top thing, and did you have any trouble getting your head around Revolver when it first came out?
Probably it. That age of hearing stuff like that at 12, it really wasn't till a couple of years later that I listened to it that it really grabbed me, and it was from the first sounds of side one, and I thought, this isn't the top 40 singles Beatles anymore when you took the whole package in, and there was a lot of different influences and different rhythms and just and different lyrics and what some of the songs made you see, even when you were young, you were going, this is, it was obvious to hear there was a lot more depth. You know, they had grown a lot. They had lost the moon, croon, June thing, so.
And changed it to what? How would you characterize what it changed to on that album?
Wow, that's, well, even now it's harder to describe because the writing really took off in many different ways, and they became more pointed toward things. I think the first song that struck me was right off the bat was Taxman, that somewhat sinister voice counting down the song. And George Harrison takes off and really makes a point that the Taxman, because England was taxing its rich folks very heavily, and they were trying to make a statement. So those types of things go, once again, you go in hearing, wow, it's the Beatles are grasping different territory and they're making a statement, and it had a little bit, Taxman had a little bit more of a crunch to it, I thought, too, a little more punch on the guitar. It wasn't so much chimey. George was kind of making a statement, a little bit heavier, if you will. You know, so.
And it was an adult topic, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, and I think there's a lot of that. I mean, Yellow Submarine was a fun song, and, you know, you always have to have a light moments on a record ebb and flow, but as you move through the record, there are different songs that take you very many different places. And after Taxman, the one that paints a lot of visions to me, and it's not really even a rock and roll song, is Eleanor Rigby. And it's you can almost picture yourself in some sort of gray London street, back street where there's churches, and you see this very sad woman, and you see all these things occurring as Paul McCartney sings the song, and you really grasp the depth of you know, it puts you there. You know, a lot of times you don't want to hear rock and roll, but when you start to take the package once again, the Beatles began to take you places, put you in situations, you know, and sad things, and they were beginning to really become poets, if you will, and more. And I think a lot of that was born out of a lot of bands, out of some of the folk folks, say like obviously Bob Dylan, who had plugged in electrically, and they made it, said, wow, we can write seriously and make this happen in rock and roll.
Yeah, because Dylan started doing songs about other characters, socially conscious. And it was the beginning of McCartney's turning outward. I mean, he started writing little playlets and little cinemagraphic things, like, you know, from you really saw it on Sergeant Pepper with, you know, Lovely Rita, and what's the one where the woman's leaving, she's leaving home, you know, things like that.
I think that's a good point. And overall, I think there is McCartney is over time, and certainly through his solo career, is he likes Broadway. He likes kind of the show thing also. I mean, he could rock and roll. There's no question about that. He could wail with Little Richard. I think he can get out there. But at the other side of him, it was a very, like, making those pictures. And I think he saw plays when he wrote, like, show tunes and musicals. So I think Eleanor Rigby, although being very sad and low-key, is very emotional when you listen to it. It's very sad. So
you remember lines that you're talking about there?
Just her loneliness, the picking up the rice after the wedding. This is probably this old spinster growing old and has never had a man, so to speak, or the love or a lost love. And it's just, I just see this picture. I the lyrics are there. Yes. Yeah.
Right. And so what were some of the other tracks that stood out for you that you wanted to comment on?
I'm going to put two together, and they're probably the two main ones done by John Lennon, and that would be She Said, She Said.
Okay, talk about them separately, because the construct of the program won't let me handle them both together.
Understood. John Lennon's She Said, She Said, and what Revolver was in a lot of ways, and inspired by Visions in a couple of songs, and Straight Out trying to tell us what they were doing, and others, they had discovered LSD. And that really affected them, obviously, in their perception of the thing, their perception of words and sound. They began to play in the studio. She Said, She Said by Lennon. Some of the lyrics, as I understand, were born out of taking a trip on LSD, I believe it was in L.A. or somewhere, and was with Peter Fonda. Peter Fonda was having somewhat of an episode, and said he felt he was dying and stuff. So Lennon came with the words, and She said,
I know what it's like
to be dead, and she's never been born. And all of these concepts and things and different takes on dimension and life and death. So LSD was announced by the Beatles in many ways. Other bands did, too. We're talking about the Beatles here, but She Said, She Said. And the other Lennon song is Tomorrow Never Knows. And actually, lyrics from this are lifted from a book written by Timothy Leary and a couple of his professor cohorts at their psychology department when they were still not, they were strictly clinically supposed to be testing the effects of LSD, and they wrote a book called The Psychedelic Experience, which was modeled after the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And the line, "Relax your mind and float downstream," is lifted from this book. And actually, there is a Leary actually recorded an album where he actually says these lines, as the album was designed to guide people through a trip. So Lennon took that, and I think the biggest thing that grabbed me about Tomorrow Never Knows was the rhythm. The rhythm was different. It was very Eastern and hypnotic and drew you in and took you someplace all new with the Beatles. And interestingly enough, Tomorrow Never Knows and She Said, She Said both end aside on the original release of the American album. So,
and talking about the drumming, I mean, it was a real, that album, when you count Rain, She Said, She Said, Tomorrow Never Knows, it was a real high point for Ringo Starr's sound in the Beatles, it seemed like, didn't it?
You know, Ringo is not going to be compared to Buddy Rich or Ginger Baker or anybody like that, but incredibly, he was an incredible rock and roll drummer. He's provided solid beat, and yeah, he was tasked with something a little different, but it was rock solid, and he just took this thing and as the Beatles began to run backwards tapes on guitars and things and run electric sitars over like, and Tomorrow Never Knows, you have this flow and you're taken somewhere that's otherworldly. And then you get the idea of, like, you know, the LSD trip and what, you know, and they're trying to project from what's inside their head into the speakers out of your stereo.
Yeah, and say this. I don't mean to be a lyrics snob, but I'll let you say the line. The Tomorrow Never Knows first line is, turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream. So I can insert that later.
Turn off your mind.
Turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream.
Okay, I'll try it one more time. Turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream.
Yeah. So what else? Just to wrap up here, any other kind of lingering feelings or impressions or moments in songs that, you know, because it's really going to be helpful for me to have people talk about, you know, particular sounds. Because what I'm planning to do is, before I play the song, is to, like, isolate some of the sounds and stuff, you know. And some people have talked about that, but I'm just giving you a chance if there are, you know, particular. You mentioned the drumming, like, for example, and I'll probably pull that out when you talk about that.
Well, it's like McCartney exposing, I think, himself in the Broadway thing. Once again, you go to Got to Get You Into My Life. You got this bright horn section that suddenly appears. You hear a lot more production as they begin to evolve from their records. It's so no more, longer the chiming guitars. You hear a lot more of just maybe a bare piano, and then the violins of Eleanor Rigby, and then, as I said, bright horns on Got to Get You Into My Life, to electric sitars, and it flows together. And George comes back again with the Eastern thing on
Love You Too.
Love You Too.
Yeah.
Get it together here.
We're a team.
There you go.
Yeah, well, it strikes me you just finished this Hot Licks show where, you know, you're playing like Otis Redding and some of the great Stax, Soul, Motown. They say that McCartney, you know, was drawing from that on Got to Get You Into My Life. When you hear, is that the same? I was alone. I took a ride. I didn't know what I would find there. Yeah. What artists do you imagine that he was drawing from? I haven't had anybody really talk about it. They've said it's like a Motown tune. I don't hear it as Motown as much as, you know, maybe some of the Memphis Horns and Stax, Arthur Conley.
I would go further south.
Okay.
Down to Memphis, Nashville.
So build a sentence that says, you know, I think McCartney was drawing from something like that.
Yeah, and Got to Get You Into My Life with the horns and stuff, I think it's, McCartney moved down, you know, there was always a lot of Motown affecting certainly a lot of other bands in England, like the Stones and stuff, but I think he moved further south because I think he liked the South better, because he liked in the past Little Richard and things like that, so it was brighter. It wasn't quite so soulful. It was a little more countrified, if you will, and snappy. And Got to Get You Into My Life, despite its brightness and stuff and almost kind of danceable and this thing like that, was McCartney's admission to he was now taking LSD. Got to Get You Into My Life. And it was an interesting way to put it across. It was almost sneaking it in there. Sneaking it in there. It was like the whole album is really fraught with images. Even the... We go back to the simple, catchy, fun tune for Ringo Starr. Yellow Submarine is actually a vision that George Harrison had while sitting out front of his house with John Lennon taking an LSD trip, and he thought his house looked like a yellow submarine. Yet we have Ringo having fun, so.
All right, last call. Anything else bubbling up for you about this?
No, I think the one thing about Revolver, when you bring it in the context of the Beatles, and even more so than what is possibly considered by some folks their crown jewel, Sgt. Pepper's, in my opinion, I think Revolver is their peak. You could hear the transition coming up through Rubber Soul. When you get to Revolver and take in the whole package, and they were really, I think they really meshed all their talents they had built up to that point in the studio, and their writing really came together at that time.
Great. Thanks for talking to me.
It was a pleasure, Paul.
All right, some good stuff in there.